Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Welcome to the Houston Innovators Podcast. I'm Natalie Harms, editor of Innovation Map. My guest for today is Jim Gable, Vice President of Innovation and President of Technology Ventures for Chevron. Jim has held various leadership roles across Chevron for the past 24 years and has recently relocated to Houston to lead Chevron Technology Ventures, which is based in the ION. Jim explains some of the unique opportunities within Chevron Innovation and also weighs in on the role incumbent energy companies play in the energy transition in Houston and beyond. Jim, thanks so much for joining me today.
Natalie, great to be here. Thanks for the invitation.
Yeah, I'm really excited to get to know you and your role at CTV. And let's just start with your background. Tell me a little bit about your career to date. What led you to Chevron and to CTV?
Well, it's a long, long story, but I've been here for 24 years, just to give a little bit of my background. And I came out of grad school and hired into Texaco, 1998. Boy, it feels like such a long time ago, almost 25 years ago. But, you know, I always was looking for a lot of interesting challenges. Geopolitical issues always interested me. New environments, new industries, learning new things. And Chevron has plenty of those, that's for sure. And so over those 24 years, I've worked in a variety of places. But one of the curiosities of my career is that I started within Chevron Technology Ventures way back when, and we'll come back to that later in the conversation, I assume. But my first full-time role was in Chevron Texaco Technology Ventures, they called it. And I helped put the group together back at the merger of Chevron and Texaco in 2001. And so I can see kind of firsthand how CTV, Chevron Tech Ventures, as we call it now, has changed. And there's a lot to talk about how industries changed, how companies have changed, and accessing external technologies. That's really interesting to see. But to my career, you know, engineer by training, and then within Chevron environment, I've gone around to a variety of different assignments. 2007, I was moved to a chemical plant and ran a chemical plant that Chevron has, then a refinery, then a commercial organization called Value Chain Optimization in the West, and then downstream technology led that, and then now moved over to this role in CTV in 2022. So I've been here just over a year, and I have just relocated to Houston, and have always worked in Houston throughout those 24 years, but now finally am living here and really excited to be here. Have two kids, and really, really great to be here. We just bought a house.
Amazing. Well, welcome to Houston. You've come at the absolute hottest time of the year. So if you can enjoy it now, you've made it through kind of the worst of it. But I know you're probably familiar with this climate just by visiting. But just to talk about your career so far, and we'll get to the specifics of CTV and what all you do with that. But what about your various roles really makes you an asset for leading this future-facing arm of Chevron?
Yeah, Natalie, I'd say the breadth of the career, you know, so many times in a very complex company like Chevron that does amazing things every day, you become a specialist pretty quick, and you become really deep and deep with deep understanding in a particular area, and you become a world-class expert. And, you know, in my case, I've moved around into various areas of the company. And so I've got a background in technology, I've got a background in the commercial organization, have a background in operations and downstream. And so I think that breadth is a little unusual. And I think it helps see some of the opportunities that the energy industry has going forward, right? We have a lot of changes going on, a dynamic time in our industry, as we're thinking not only about of course, delivering energy safely to those that need it around the world, but now also thinking about changing markets, changing customers, lower carbon energy. And so a lot of that, a lot of the new opportunities that we're thinking about, I think I can leverage my background, which is broader than many in Chevron.
Well, I know a lot of Houston's innovation industry and economy knows CTV, Chevron Technology Ventures. You're based out of the ION. We were just talking about your office there. But for those unfamiliar, give us an overview of CTV and what the entire organization within Chevron encompasses.
We say we open doors to the future within Chevron. And that's a simple way of saying, you know, we're the on-ramp for early stage technology to get into the company. If we think about a company like Chevron and all the things that it does and the amazing amount of technology it consumes, not all of that is developed internally. And in fact, a lion's share is developed externally. Well, how do you access that? And CTV has been around for 24 years, as I mentioned, since that 1999 time period. And what we do, Natalie, is we scout. So we look for technologies that impact Chevron across all points of the compass, not just lower carbon, but a lot of base business or oil and gas production and refining technologies. Then we transfer those technologies in, typically through customer relationships and open, transparent relationships, just like any company. We also set the technology strategy for Chevron. Chevron has a powerful business strategy, and we think about, all right, what technologies are going to be needed to help Chevron succeed? And then finally, we lead the transformational technology portion of our research and development budget. So things that look far afield from our current business out into the future in that longer time period, we handle that and lead that R&D effort. So with that, you can kind of tell that's going to be, 70, 80% externally facing. It's clearly an externally facing part of the company. And we deal with universities, national labs, the venture ecosystem, incubators, all sorts of these wonderful entrepreneurs and labs that are creating technologies that are now intersecting what we do. And a year and a half ago. We started in 2021, so maybe it's 2 years by now. We started Chevron New Energies. And folks may have heard of that too. Chevron New Energies, or CNE, they commercialize lower carbon technologies. And so think about them being kind of subsequent to CTV. If CTV, Chevron Tech Ventures, looks at early stage and scouts and identifies and transfers technology in, well, CNE can commercialize that technology, because that's one of the great roles of incumbents is around how do you scale some of these new inventions. And so companies like Svante, Carbon Clean, Baseload are companies in the lower carbon space that CTV has first accessed, typically through our venture capital program. And then CNE has broadened the relationship and really applied a lot of the horsepower that Chevron can help with scaling a lot of these different technologies.
That's really interesting to kind of have that, next step for some of the companies and technology from CTV getting to have that opportunity to do something a little bit more later stage, but still with Chevron. So that being said, what other programs fall under the umbrella of CTV that you oversee?
Well, the Houston ecosystem is one. And I'll mention that. I'll also mention Chevron Studio. You know, for the Houston ecosystem, as I talked about, we're very externally focused. And if we think about the great sources of innovation across the country, Houston is quickly becoming one of those in the lower carbon space, like it has always been in the energy space. And, Chevron, we were the first energy company to sponsor the Rice Alliance and Clean Tech Forum. We have been a Greentown Labs sponsor since 2013, and we're a founding sponsor of the Houston Greentown Labs when it just started up a couple years back. Founding partner of the ION collaborative space, which, as you mentioned, I'm sitting in right now. And of course, we do a lot with local startups. We have a catalyst program, seed stage funding for early stage companies. A lot in Houston is where we invest as well. And then last year, we started another program that you might hear about related to CTV. We lead what's called the Chevron Studio. And that is a program that links entrepreneurs with IP that's been sitting on the shelf of universities or national labs waiting for someone to commercialize. You know, some entrepreneur is looking for their next gig, is looking for their next role, wants maybe to get an energy, high-powered, know what they're doing. And of course, now this is a program where partnering with the National Renewable Energy Lab, NREL, Chevron and NREL are acting kind of as the broker between IP from universities and these entrepreneurs that might want to get started in the energy space. And so we put together cohort one, as we called it, last year. And we had six universities, one national lab put in the IP. And then we had a variety of entrepreneurs apply to be part of the program. And it's a selective program. And one of those in the optical detection space for methane is now moving into scale up as part of that cohort one. And we started cohort two, and the program's expanding, 16 universities, three national labs, and we're getting a lot of great uptake and great ideas and folks volunteering to be a part of the program. So we're excited about the Chevron Studio as well.
Yeah, I had a story on Studio for those more want to learn more. I had a story on Innovation Map on that. It was very interesting. I love this idea of like reverse engineering a startup and like, you know, the tech and then finding the entrepreneur. And it's such an interesting concept and I think going to drive some good results. Now that you've kind of explained the overview of the program, I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about what makes CTV different. I think when you sit down with corporate innovation leaders, everyone's doing something different. They have different goals, but they're all doing this thing of incorporating technology and finding new technologies, but they're going about it in different ways. So I just wanted to see if you could explain what makes Chevron a little different from everyone else out there.
Yeah. You know, one of the ways we think about it starts with our core mission and mandate, which really is to drive value in Chevron from technologies we've introduced business units to. And so we measure ourselves not by not only by, you know, core financial return metrics, let's say on venture capital, but we ask the businesses each year to calculate how much value did they gain from technologies we introduced them to. And that really is our core metric that we measure ourselves in terms of technology access. And, you know, with that, we've got a lot kind of in terms of what makes us different, Natalie. We've got a lot of experience from our 24 years. Corporate venturing, corporate innovation, this kind of open access model or open innovation model, it's fraught with challenges. It's fraught with risks. It's fraught with judgment that you have to apply very judiciously to get the right outcome. And so, you know, that's one of the reasons why we're different. It's one of the reasons why we've had the longevity that we've had, is that we have this experience to rely on the judgment. We have longstanding participants in our team who are smart, hardworking, great teammates. You know, they're mission driven. They love technology. They love making a difference. And they have made a tremendous impact over those 24 years. We do certainly try to be independent of Chevron, right? So some of the things we're doing, some of the things we're looking at are long-term. They potentially could be disruptive to some of the base business that Chevron operates. And so, for instance, we started looking at carbon capture in 2012, 2013, made our first investment in 2014. In similar fashion now, we're looking at fusion, and we have two fusion investments from a couple of years back. And that's, you know, kind of a technology that's clearly not in Chevron's current strategies, but it may intersect the industry at some point in the future. And so, you know, our people are probably the biggest difference wrapping up, are probably the biggest difference between us and other groups. Highly talented, great networks in Chevron, great knowledge of business pain points, and they have really made a difference in what we're trying to achieve.
That's a good point. 24 years, I'm not sure a whole lot of corporates, at least in the energy industry, have had programs going on for that long. So that's definitely something different. Just going off of that, you mentioned these different technologies that have, you know, CTV has made investments in. And how do you keep up with the latest technology that has the potential for disrupting the energy industry? How do you, you know, do you have this kind of map in your head of the different technologies to the different applications? And how do you keep that map up to date, I guess?
I wish I could keep track of everything in my head, right? It's a it's an outside in, inside out type of thing. You got to do both. And so what the heck do I mean by that? Well, you know, we'll start with, as I just wrapped up that previous question, we'll start with as detailed a knowledge as we can get of discrete technical challenges of our organization and operations, whether that's lower carbon, whether that's base business. What are we really trying to achieve? What's an obstacle that's standing in our way? If only we could do X, we could unlock a lot of value. So that's kind of the inside out approach, I'll say. And then armed with that pain point, we'll go out and we'll try to find technologies that can address that pain point. And then outside in, you know, we look at, like many shops, we look at well over 1,000 deals a year. The vast majority, I'll say, aren't high quality, right? You've really got to keep looking for the needle in a haystack to try and find the right opportunity and something that intersects a little bit of what we're trying to do internally. You know, not everything we do is going to intersect internally, as I just mentioned with a couple examples, but the lion's share we try to. And when I think about current interests of the organization, Chevron's has, you know, a two-pronged strategy with lower carbon, and I'll stick there for a second. One is we want to reduce the carbon intensity of our current oil and gas business, and we've got a target to reduce by 35% our carbon intensity by 2028. That is one primary metric for us on the upstream and downstream side of our current business. And so one way to do that is to electrify the oil field or the refinery with electrons that are, you know, sourced from lower carbon power production technologies, you know, basically lower carbon electrons relative to some of the propane, natural gas, diesel, fuel level gas that we might use to power the equipment in the field that's creating either electricity or it's creating thermal, it's creating heat that we use in our operations. And so if we can find ways to electrify the oil field, that will really help us hit that upstream target with that 35% reduction that we're aiming to achieve. So we're looking at solar thermal technologies. There's a couple particularly interesting ones that address the ride-through challenges of normal solar technologies that, you know, how do you ride through and provide 24/7 reliable power? That's one, and that's more of a fundamental technology or a shift that we're looking at, just as one example of things that interest us now.
Yeah, wow. 1,000 companies a year is a lot. I wonder if any of the companies that you've learned about and then added on to the CTV portfolio over your tenure, any companies that stand out to you as being full of potential for disruption that you want to talk about specifically?
Well, I'll piggyback on the answer I just gave. And you know, this one company we're working with is developing a solution for the oil field to provide that ride through capability for lower carbon electricity. And that is a company called RayGen out of Australia. And they do a really interesting system where they take mirrors reflected onto a high efficiency solar cell. And then use those electrons to, and plus radiant heat coming from the solar cell as well, to drive a temperature differential between two fluids. And then they run that through an organic Rankine cycle. And they create the ability to effectively store that power produced at high times of solar radiation. They can store that and use it at night, use it when we need to run our operations and the sun isn't shining. So that company, RayGen, is a company we invested in 2 years ago, I think, and they're doing really well and coming up with some really novel technologies.
Well, I know energy storage is definitely one of those verticals that needs a lot of innovation. So that's exciting to hear that that's something Chevron is looking at. You mentioned, and I want to kind of get in some more broader topics, but before, I guess, to start with, we talked a little bit about, you know, this internal innovation versus external innovation. I wonder, over the years, how has that evolved? Because I know energy companies really historically have operated in silos and closed doors. And obviously, that's changed with these venture arms that are looking for outside technology to bring in. So from your perspective, how has that changed over the years, this balancing of internal and external innovation? And what opportunities has that really Or what opportunities are there still to break down some barriers?
Yeah, it's changed tremendously, really, Natalie. And in starting 20 years ago, you really got to see the early days of industrial companies, energy companies specifically, working with early stage external startups who were coming up with some neat things, right? And back in the 70s, 80s, 90s, we had a fantastic facility, still have the fantastic facility, but we had a very large internal R&D organization within Chevron that came up with some amazing technologies relating to catalysis, fuel and lubricant additives, all sorts of technologies down the line. And over time, we have cored up and reduced the breadth of our internal R&D capabilities. And we've cored up around data, around catalysis, around some other key areas for us. And we basically now rely on the external world to provide a lot of those technologies that we need, as I mentioned earlier. And of course, at the same time, you have the rise of the venture capital industry over those same decades. And now external companies are creating a lot of interesting technologies. Yet, when you think back 20 years, 25 years ago, corporate America and industrials really didn't know how to deal with these early stage disruptors on the outside. And we have gotten a lot better. I'll speak, you know, corporate America's gotten a lot better. Chevron's gotten very good at interacting with the external folks, screening, assessing, and then transferring the innovation in, being just a good customer, a good channel partner for the startup company. It's, you know, it's that open innovation model. But 20 years ago, our venture team was 7 people. And today, it's around 12 to 14. And yet we have about twice as many trying to transfer the technology into the company, right? That's one real way that companies have changed over those 20, 25 years is, you know, you can't just kind of find a business plan, find a customer brochure of something neat on the outside, and then flip it over the fence to somebody in the business unit and expect them really to have an interest in it. You've got to be an effective communicator. You got to have credibility with the folks in the business that you can really go to and explain, hey, here's what I ran across outside. Here's why it may have an impact because I used to work in this facility. I used to work with you. I used to do your job way back when. I know what you're dealing with. And that type of, you know, internal promotion, internal coordination and business development is really, really important in a large company where everybody's rushing around doing everything they can to deliver safe, reliable energy every day. So that's been one big change. But, you know, other ways, this is really kind of clean tech. People call it clean tech 2.0. It's really clean tech 3.0. I was there at the turn of the century when we had companies like Plug Power, Active Power, Capstone Turbine. We had others, fuel cell energy, that were kind of the rage. And then 12, 13 years ago, we had a new crop, and now we have kind of clean tech 3.0. And, you know, the people are better now. The entrepreneurs are better. The investors are better. Exits are here, starting with SPAC exits, you know, 5 years ago, 4 years ago. Now exits are here in the clean tech space. That's new. And then finally, this is all due, it's all driven by policy-enabled markets. And the policy is here too, right? 20 years ago, you didn't have nearly the same level of policy influence that you do now. And so I think things are coming together to help us, you know, really create and deliver that affordable, reliable, ever cleaner energy that's going to be needed for a long time.
Yeah, it does seem to be like a movement that's happening. And something you mentioned is maybe like an obvious answer, but I thought we would discuss it. As great as it is that Chevron is having access to these new technologies that they can maybe down the road incorporate into their business model, it's also an extremely valuable relationship to these startups, right? So tell me a little bit about the opportunity startups that are involved in CTV and one of the various programs has access to.
Yeah, I mean, you hit the nail on the head in terms of, you know, think about a startup, think about the entrepreneurial path. You know, MIT and the Martin Trust Center has a wonderful 24-step process for entrepreneurialism. And one of the steps is, you know, will the dogs eat the dog food? You know, how can we get potential customers to give us early feedback on our idea, on our innovation, to make sure that we're on the right track? And honestly, almost every entrepreneur is always pivoting, always course correcting from what they originally started out with. And that early customer feedback is really, really important. How does my innovation fit within a complex system that has a ton of other technologies and other components and parts, right? And then, you know, the other kind of big role that incumbents can play is helping de-risk the technology. As you move forward, how can we create trials and pilots that de-risk the technology and show that this really can scale? There's nothing to work on in the energy business if it's not going to scale. And so how do you find that early? How do you really think closely with a current incumbent about, hey, are we going to be able to get this technology really, really big? Because the problems that we face are really, really big. And incumbents have the systems engineering, the processes to de-risk, the capabilities, the assets, the customers, the brand, the distribution, just so many things that can help entrepreneurs. And a lot of us are accustomed to technology changes in our lifetimes, like the iPhone. Where's my phone? I think it's sitting over here. You know, that was started 2007. And now they're on what, version 14 or 15? Like that's happening so quickly, so fast. Fabulous product, changing the world. And I think that to some degree, we've accustomed society to think about the energy evolution in similar time terms. You know, it's going to be something quick because that's what we're all used to. We're all used to technology changing our lives so quickly nowadays. And yet energy is fundamentally different. And I really think due to the scale, and I really think you're going to have a great partnership between entrepreneurs and innovators and companies that can help scale to address society's aspirations. And that goes beyond energy. That applies to, you know, steel. It applies to chemicals. It applies to automotive. It applies to trucking, rail, shipping. It's just the number of zeros behind every number in any of those industries are just so big that it really is going to be important to find technologies that scale and work with channel partners that can help you do it.
How do you, I think you've kind of led into this, but what is the role of incumbents during this energy transition? I think a lot more companies, larger corporations are thinking more specifically about the future of energy every day. That seems to be more talked about. But yeah, what's their role now and what's going to be the role in the future?
Well, a lot of things I did just mention, Natalie, but you know, something else could be helping get these large scale projects started and leveraging a lot of those, you know, capabilities, assets, systems engineering, customer relationships that I mentioned earlier, brand, capital, balance sheet, to get some projects off the ground that do help de-risk the technology. And I think about Chevron's Bayou Bend carbon capture and sequestration project. You know, that's on the Texas Gulf Coast. That's it's around almost 140,000 acres of pore space, both onshore and offshore. It's got a gross storage capacity aiming for more than 1 billion metric tons of CO2. And we're partnering with a couple different companies, one's Talos, one's CarbonVert, to get that program going and that project going, where we're going to take CO2 from a variety of point sources in the Beaumont ship channel area. And then we're going to, of course, deliver that to a sequestering environment where we can capture that CO2 and store it for a long time. So with that, you know, that's something that is going to require a lot of capital. It's going to require a lot of permitting, regulation, a heck of a lot of engineering, a lot of partnership with the technology provider, with these other companies that I mentioned. And so that's just one example of, you know, de-risking a technology or de-risking the commercial aspects of a proposed technical solution that the incumbents can help with.
Yeah, I think something that comes to my mind when you were talking about this way that the world has really adjusted to the rapid evolution of technology, it is pretty wild when you think of it. And I've gotten the clickbait articles and like YouTube videos, like really talking about the way technology has changed just in the last, just in our lifetimes. I think it's really interesting. And I think a lot of the population is looking to the future of energy to adapt this timeline. But do you feel like the way corporates are running now, do you think that they have the potential to be that, to adapt that quickly and to implement these technologies? I feel like, yeah, I don't know if you have like a pros and cons list of that. But yeah, just looking at the landscape today, do you feel positive about that?
I do. I really do. And, you know, if we think about what energy provides, you know, it provides human progress, it pulls people out of abject poverty, it provides so many fabulous things, you know, the definition, the ability to do work. I love that definition of energy. But if we think about the power that that provides, we know that because of the size, the scale, what energy provides, all forms of energy are going to be needed in the future. And, you know, they all have to be lower carbon. And that includes hydrocarbons. We're going to have hydrocarbons and need hydrocarbons for a long time. And our existing hydrocarbon production methods, we've got to get lower carbon. And that's what I mentioned, 35% reduction by 2028 is our target. And we're well on track to achieve that. And so that's really important for us. And Chevron's absolutely committed to doing that. We've got our net zero aspiration for equity upstream scope 1 and 2 by 2050. And that's on the base business. Then, of course, we're developing these new value chains. And it's around hydrogen, renewable fuels, carbon capture. The example I just talked about, Bayou Bend's a big part of that. So we are absolutely committed to that. And I think you'll find large industrial companies across all the elements of change that we need to undertake to achieve society's aspirations that are going to be equally willing in almost whatever industry you think about, whether it's some of those others I mentioned, steel, agriculture, power generation, of course, transportation. I'm really energized when I get on college campuses and you think about the focus that all of our next generation of leaders and technical folks have when they think about what they want to do in sustainability and how they're going to make an impact in where we need to go. And it all centers around providing that affordable, reliable, and ever cleaner energy. You gotta do all three. You can't just do ever cleaner. You can't just do affordable. You got to do all three. But this next generation of leaders is really, really focused on that. And I think they're going to be do some amazing things.
I love that. I mean, it can be so daunting looking just at how much we still have to do, but it's a great reminder to look at the future generations coming in to help accomplish those goals. Speaking of the future generations and ecosystems, I want to talk about Houston's innovation ecosystem, which is happy to welcome you now being based here. But I wonder from your background and your perspectives on the coasts, what do you think of Houston's innovation ecosystem as a whole and specifically its energy innovation ecosystem?
Yeah, what a great opportunity for Houston. I mean, go back to that previous conversation we were having around incumbents and think about, you know, what's currently in Houston, right? 1.1 million energy jobs, 235,000 tech jobs, 60,000 clean tech jobs. Those are from the Greater Houston Partnership, which has done a great job quantifying all the benefits that Houston can bring to any innovator that's trying to scale. And so we do spend a lot of time in Palo Alto. We spend a lot of time in Cambridge. We spend a lot of time in Houston. And it is an interesting intellectual kind of discussion to kind of see how these different ecosystems compare to each other. And I would just encourage Houston to not try to be something that we're not. You know, Houston's got to be Houston. And I don't think we should try necessarily to follow the same path as Palo Alto, as Boston. We have fabulous primary research in Houston. I think about rice and carbon materials being just one of the preeminent examples of that. But at the same time, you know, we may not have the same breadth of primary research that other ecosystems have. And that's perfectly okay. We have an amazing advantage in what we just talked about with those jobs, the people, the skills that are here in Houston, the number of incumbents, the energy companies, the industrial companies that are all focused on this. And you could argue that we've got great innovation going on and we need to continue that, certainly. But we also need to spend maybe more effort, more time, more resources on scaling some of what we already have. And that's really where Houston can lever its advantages. It's in a wonderful position. We're in a wonderful position to, you know, leverage our strengths and capitalize on where we're different, which is that we're an industrial company that solved energy challenges for 120 years, whatever the number is, and we'll go on and continue to do that in Houston. And we should really focus on you know, capitalizing on what we got and focusing on that.
What a great reminder too, because I think Houston does tend to compare itself to some longer standing ecosystems, but I think the renowned reputation is that we are unique and we need to stop doing that. Stop comparing. That's a great reminder.
And we do great things, Natalie, in primary research. And so I'm not in any way saying we don't, because we certainly do. And I mentioned a couple, but we also have a huge advantage we should take advantage of.
Exactly. I guess just to wrap up, you know, for energy tech startup founders listening, what's the best way to start, learn more about CTV? And then once they do get the opportunity to maybe be one of those 1,000 companies this year to pitch or reach out, how can they stand apart?
Yeah, well, you know, reaching us, we're on the web. You'll see us around Houston all the time and elsewhere as well. So getting a hold of us isn't necessarily a problem. How to stand out? I would focus on clearly the basics of your pitch. Obviously, that's important. I would focus on realism and focus on an objectivity about the challenges ahead. You know, it's one thing if we hear about an entrepreneur who clearly has an interesting idea, interesting product, but is completely underselling the challenges of scale. They're not really appreciating how we're going to get from, let's say, TRL 5 to TRL 8. And how are we going to leverage resources, capital to do that? It's a challenge. And, I really would like to see entrepreneurs with more of an objective lens. At the same time, you've got to have enthusiasm, got to have all the passion and be mission driven that we expect everybody to be. But there's a lot of great activities going on, and there's a lot of fantastic entrepreneurs and innovators in the US and elsewhere. And we would love to intersect anybody that's got a great idea.
Yeah, absolutely. Sounds like, and I've heard this before, you know, for startups to do their homework before taking that first step and reaching out. Make sure they know what they're bringing to the table and can communicate that properly to y'all. Seems like a good reminder for everyone. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for speaking with me today. This has been really exciting to see all of the goings on that's happening at Chevron Technology Ventures. And it's been nice to meet you and be one of the first maybe to welcome you now to your full-time residency in Houston.
Great, Natalie. Really enjoyed it. Thanks for the invite. A great conversation, and we'll look forward to seeing you around town.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Houston Innovators Podcast. Don't forget to hit subscribe so you don't miss next week's edition, and check out innovationmap.com for the latest Houston startup and innovation news.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.